Assalamu alaikum. We do have many questions that we are carrying from the last weeks that we had our Q&A program and the SMSs that you have sent in those weeks. We will be, inshallah, starting off with those SMSs today. And also, if you have any comments about this program, how long you want to have it, for half an hour, 1 hour, 1.5 hours, do SMS us also, and so that we know how long we could have this program for your benefit, inshallah. Let's start off our program. We have Mufti Afzal Hussain Ilyas on the line. Assalamu alaikum, Mufti sir.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And how are you doing tonight, Mufti sir?
Alhamdulillah.
Jazakumullah. Mufti sir, the first question we have is about Rabbana lakal hamd in salah. Is it necessary for the imam to say Rabbana lakal hamd?
It'll be good if he also says it, because the entire duration of salah must be, the musalli, the one performing the salah, should be engaged in remembering in the zikr of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So that is why the fuqaha have written, for example, that, and this is a very interesting masla I read up, if a masbuk, a latecomer, meaning a latecomer in salat, now he has to complete one rakat or two rakat, whatever the case may be, now he will read at-tahiyyat only, and then remain silent, and when the imam gives the salam, he will stand up to complete the salah. So the fuqaha have written that this person who is a masbuk, he should try to read at-tahiyyat very, very slowly, so that he is able to sit for the entire duration of normal taken time for at-tahiyyat, durood Ibrahim, and the dua, and when the imam gives the salam, then by that time he should have completed his slow recitation of at-tahiyyat. The idea is not to remain silent for any duration in salah when the muqtadi has to read. And the imam is the one leading the salah, so he is the one who should be in the remembrance of Allah Jalla Majdahu all the time. So he should recite it.
Jazakumullah. We have a caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
I would like to know, they say for this straight route there, they have got namaz facilities. Do you think it advisable for them to give azan as well there, so that all the people should know it's time for salat?
Okay.
Okay.
Jazakallah, sister.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Jee, Mufti sir.
Gee, I did not get that. Say.
The trade route mall, the new mall here in Lens, yeah. It has a Jamaat Khana for salah facilities. Yeah. The sister wants to know, do you think that as it's advisable that they give azan for all the five times salat, so that all the people know that it's time for salah?
We do not have a jurisdiction over that Jamaat Khana. And if they have to give azan, it will be a very good thing. So the governors or trustees of that particular site should be approached. And if they are able to give azan, and it is audible, and it is quite loud, so that those in that complex can listen to the sound of azan, then inshallah that will be most rewarding, and people will definitely go to that Jamaat Khana for their Salat Wood Jamaat.
Jazakumullah. Assalamu alaikum. Can you combine the Sunnah and Faraz of Ghusl together?
Automatically, when a person is making the Faraz of Ghusl, the Faraz of Ghusl will be separate from the Sunnat of Ghusl. I do not understand what they mean by combining the faraz and the sunnats of ghusl. Because if you look carefully, the ghusl will be made when the entire body has water over it, and there is water inserted in the nostrils, and gargling takes place. So when that is done, all other things are inclusive. Everything has been done.
Jazakumullah. Listeners, 011-854-1548 is the number to dial. Any questions that you have, Muti Ilyas, inshallah, will try to help you through those questions. The SMS number is 082-491-7025. The next question, Muftizab, is about the ruling of a gift that is returned to the giver. What is the ruling of a gift that is returned to the giver?
I think we had this question before, and I explained that this is most despicable action and highly detested, abominable action, that if a person gives a gift and then takes that gift back, the hadith is very clear and severe warning has been given to the person who gives a gift and then subsequently takes that gift back. In fact, the meaning of the hadith is, it is like a dog who vomits and then licks up the vomit. Such a severe warning has been given, admonition has been sounded for that person who gives a gift and then wants that gift back.
Jazakumullah. The next question, is it true that Suratul Qalam is good for exams? What can I read for exams?
The examination, you can read Rabbi Zidni Hilma, oh Allah, increase me in knowledge. And also it has been stated that while a person is in the exam room, whether it be an exam pertaining to deen or circular, and the person is now stuck, blank, then recitation of Durood Sharif aids the person to recall and to compose so that the person will understand and comprehend the question. Also, it has been stated that the first four ayat of Surah Alaq, if it is recited 101 times on some badam, and then that badam is consumed in odd numbers, 3 or 1, 3 or 5 daily, that should, inshallah, strengthen the memory. Because examination will depend on memory, and memory, according to the elders, depends on sin. So abstain from sin, memory will improve, examination will become easy, inshallah.
Inshallah. So next question. If one enters... it's an SMS question again. If one enters a competition by SMS and the SMS is free, is it permissible to accept the prize if you win?
Yes, in that case, it is permissible to do so. And here also I must state that we had 1 week off, and the SMS questions concerning SMS and this drawing, etc., and I would appreciate if the callers in future, when they pose a question, they must not tell me that certain firm is involved or certain shop is involved or certain outlet is involved. I would not like on my program to have the names mentioned. You can ask the question without mentioning the shop name or the factory name. I do not want to know that. I want to know the question itself. So if, for example, they have question posed and you have to answer via SMS, then they take all the correct answers and draw, then that is permissible according to the muftis. But according to some muftis, although it is permissible, they say they do not seem to like the idea very much. However, the ruling of permissibility will be given. Now the other question arises about the SMS. When you are told that this SMS is costing more than the normal rate SMS, and the extra amount that you are paying at least is going for a certain cause. The Muftis are also saying that when there is no tajahul, there is no ignorance or hidden factors or unknown factors, then in that case also it will become permissible when everything has been explained in detail of the entry and the amount charged, even if it be extra than the normal SMS rate.
Jazakumullah khair. So, okay, we have a caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Can you hear me?
Jesus, say your question.
Okay, I cannot ask you, Nana. He's saying, burgers.
Sorry, we can't hear you, sister. Could you speak up also?
Okay, the ING burgers are very halal because they've got a sana, a proof sign on the box.
Okay. I don't know if Mufti will be able to answer this question. Because
I don't know. I do not hear the answer question.
The sister wants to know about I and J products. Is it halal to consume?
That question should be posed to the Sanha authorities when they come. And if there is any Muslim...
Sorry, sister, you have your radio. Okay, I think maybe.
If there is any Muslim... authoritative body sanctioning the products, then it will be permissible to consume it, provided the Muslim halal authority body fears Allah, has got checks and balances, and has got its theological department in order.
Jazakallah. And just to, for the benefit of the listeners, if you have any halal queries, you can direct it to Sanha there. Number is 0861786111. Office hours, inshallah, they'll be able to help you with those questions. The next question, assalamu alaikum. Can I wash my ihram with soap or detergent?
It is permissible to do so.
Jazakumullah. What items can a woman take with herself after getting a talaq?
Whatever belongs to her, whatever items, furniture, crockery, furniture, fixtures, fittings, jewelry, appliances, whatever belongs to her, she can take it and go. And here, since this question has come up, then we pray that talaq does not occur, because unfortunately, it is very sad in our age that every now and then we are hearing of talaq being given, and after marriage of 10 years, 15 years, 4 children involved, and the person is also a grandfather, but he still wants to give talaq and is giving talaq. So we say that draw every now and then an inventory that what belongs to who in that house. The husband is the owner of this, and the wife is the owner of that. And have this, not with the view of talaq and separation, but with the view that someone passes away, the husband or the wife, they will know what's going into the estate of the husband or the wife for distribution thereof. So this has to be done on a regular basis, constantly. Now in this case, the question has arisen because there was no inventory drawn up as to who owns what. So if that was drawn up, the rule is very simple. What belongs to the wife, now she is unfortunately divorced, she is entitled to all what it belongs to her, and she can take it.
Jazakumullah. So then we have, if a customer forgets anything in the shop, can the owner use it, or can he give it as charity after a certain period?
He will first of all advertise it in his shop, meaning put up a notice that a certain item has been left here, forgotten here, and the owner should claim it, identify it and claim it. And also that this can be done for a period of 3 months. Subsequently, that the person, the owner, can evaluate that product and keep it in the shop and give the amount out in charity. Or that item itself can be given out in charity. However, if that person comes back after 3 months, hypothetically speaking, then inshallah, if that owner, he returns the product, the item to the rightful owner, will earn Jannat, inshallah.
Jazakumullah. So the next question, is it permissible to work in a bank?
In that section of the bank wherein no interest transaction or insertion of interest is done or calculation of interest is done, then it is permissible. However, definitely it is makruh. For example, a person can work as a cashier, as a teller. But because the whole system of bank is based upon interest, therefore the ulama are stating that although permissible, but definitely detested, because that this is not the best of jobs. The person should work there, make istighfar daily, and seek another job. No sooner another job is found, then the person, even if the other job is not so lucrative and paying as well as the bank job, the person should adopt for a complete halal shari compliant earning than a doubtful one.
Jazakumullah. Let's take our caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Hello.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Mulana, I would like to ask Ubaida, is it a girl's name or a boy's name?
Ubaida.
Ubaida.
Okay.
And what is the meaning of it, please?
Okay.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah. Let's take
a look. Ubaid is a boy's name, Ubaid is a girl's name. And when Sheikh Jad has his program, you can ask him the meaning.
Inshallah. On Saturday at 11 a.m., we have a program on Muslim names. And inshallah, Sheikh Jad will be able to help you with the meanings of the different names. But Mufti Sahib did say that Ubaid is a male name and Ubaida is a female name. Our next caller, Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Ji, brother, your question?
I wanted to ask Mufti, if your father leaves what you call shares, for example, what percentage do the sons get and what percentage do the daughters get?
Okay. Okay, inshallah, Mufti Sahib will answer your question.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah. Ji, Mufti Sahib?
The boys will get 2 shares in comparison to the female, the daughters getting 1. So that means the daughters will get half of the boy's share. Now, there is an interesting chart. It's on my website, alislam.co.za. It's called Inheritance Chart. Go to section of Fiqh there. And then you download inheritance chart where the respective inheritance proportions are stipulated and mentioned in table form.
Jazakumullah. Do you have another caller? Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Malana.
Ji.
And Mufti sir, I just want to find out. I was looking for a plot to buy for a madrasa, right? To open another madrasa. So I couldn't get a plot anywhere else. So I then tried to build a madrasa in my yard, right? And the madrasa that I built in my yard, my children actually put 15,000, and 15,000 I was getting from people, right? But the house that I'm staying in, it's actually my and my children's house. And I got married again now 4 years ago, right? So I want to know if what will happen one day if I would like to, like, sell the house, because, say, we spent 15,000 on the house, which was not our money, and we would make the right decision to... Maybe if something has to happen to me one day, then we want to know if we sell the house, we will even give more money back. Is it the right thing what I'm doing, or is it not right what I'm going to do?
Okay.
Listen on A.
Hold on a minute, sister. Yes. Mufti Saab, you need to ask any questions to the sister?
See, I'm having difficulty tonight because the caller's call is, I cannot hear properly.
Oh, okay.
You'll have to repeat it.
Okay. Before you go, sister, let me just tell Mufti Saab's question. Mufti Saab's sister says that she has a plot where her house is, and on that plot she built a madrasa. 15,000 rands was given by her children, and the other 15,000 rands was given by the public. The house that they are staying on is separate from the madrasa. It's a
it's on the same plot.
On the same plot, but
please,
is okay.
Please. If we have to sell the house, this is what I'm worried about, then just say like something...
Okay, I understand.
Okay, so she wants to know what must she do if she sells. Okay, Jazakumullah, sister.
Jazakumullah, Allah reward all of you.
Ameen.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Now, what she has to do, that she has to make a general statement from the madrasa side, that the money is contributed towards building the masjid, the madrasa on her plot, belongs to her. Meaning that those who contributed to building that particular madrasa, which is on her plot, what she is worried at the moment, that half belongs to her and half belongs to the donors. So she has to tell the donors that this has been donated to her, meaning she is the owner of it. When she informs the donors that this structure has been now ceded over to her, then there is no problem. Absolutely, because when she wants to sell, she'll sell her house and the madrasa structure, because everything belongs to her. Now, failing which, the difficulty arises if the donors claim that this structure belongs to us. Now, it is very difficult if there are too many donors. That is why it is advisable to go to the first route, the first solution, to tell the donors, he will know obviously the donors, that have you all given me this or do I owe you all the money? Now, if they say, no, you owe us the money, that she should make some arrangements and start paying them out. If they say, though, we are owners of that madrasa half, when she sells, she will have to give them their money back.
Jazakumullah. Let's take, we have two callers, and then after that we go for the news break. We'll continue after that. Mufti Saab can perhaps answer these questions after the 9 o'clock news, inshallah. Let's take the callers. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Jee, brother, your question?
My question is one that I am separated from my wife, and my wife has given a divorce in court. And what I'd like to know is, now, the house, we are married in community or property, and I'd like to know what to do there on the house.
Okay. Okay. Mufti Saab, you understood that question?
No.
The brother say he was separated from the wife, then they are now divorced by the court, and they married in community of property. Now, how do they distribute their house in that?
First of all, that did he divorce her or the court divorced?
Did brother, did you divorce or did
the court? No, she went to the courts and asked for the divorce. And the other thing is that the Islamic Sharia law, that I'm still married in, what you call it, that she has to still apply for the what you call it, for the talaq, the jamiat, or what should happen there as well. And I've got three kids.
Okay. Mufti Saab, do you want to answer this question after the 9 o'clock news?
You understood the particulars of it, right?
Yes, inshallah.
Take that the call
of it. Okay, let's take it. Okay, Jazakullah, brother.
Wa
alaikum salam. Ji, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. I just wanted to find out what is the ruling with regards to female Jamaat, because I went to a place recently where the girls said, I've never heard of this before, but they said that Jamaat is allowed. And in fact, they did read Salah Jamaat where there was an imamah, but she didn't lead the Salah. She stood in the first saf with everybody else, but read as an imam would lead the Salah. So I just wanted to know, because I've never seen something or heard of anything like this before. I just want to know what the ruling with regard to this is, please.
Okay, Jazakumullah, sister.
Okay,
we had two questions. The first one was from a brother. He's saying he's separated from his wife, and she got divorced from the court. They have three kids. They are married in community of property. He wants to know what's the procedure. If she wants an Islamic or Sharia divorce, must she go to the Jamiat? And also, when it comes to distributing the property that they have, they married in community of property and whatever they own, how should they distribute it? And also, as far as the kids are concerned, what's the ruling pertaining to that?
He asked so many questions that we can talk a lot about that. However, what I would advise him, I would give you some general guidelines for him, and I hope he's listening, that first of all, the court ruling of divorce is not a divorce. Unless he divorced his wife via the court, then it will be valid. So first of all, we have to find out, and he should find out also, that who divorced his wife. If the court ruled and divorced his wife, that is not a Islamic divorce. He has to do it himself. Or an annulment has to be done via a Shari Panchat, a Shari committee, like the Jamiat, etc. Now, because, let us say, if there is a divorce activated, then, unfortunately, if he's married in community of property, which I understand, what is his antenuptial contract is the Islamic contract, meaning that what is his, and what is hers. Now, in community of property will mean that what is also hers, and what is hers is also his. So that's where there is difficulty arising. In Islam, it's supposed to be after marriage, what is yours, the husband's is the husband's, and what is the wife's is the wife's. Now when there is interlacing or inter-ownership, they have to sit down and negotiate a common grounds of division. And the custody of the children will be, if the wife is capable of caring for them and spiritually bringing them up properly, Islamically, then until they reach maturity, it is her responsibility. Subsequently, that on becoming mature, he is entitled to take the children.
Jazakumullah. The next question is about a female Jamaat. There are females, and one female leads the whole group of females. She stands in the middle. The sister wants to know, is that correct?
First of all, according to the Hanafi school of thought, that the females making Salat with Jamaat is makruh. Not desired, not like, detested. However, if they have to do it, then she will not stand like how the male imam stands out, but will be in the center amongst them, meaning in the same line, in the center. That is the way they will make their Salat wa Jamaat.
Jazakumullah. We have a caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Ji, your question, sister?
I'd like to know if it's permissible for a woman to be a hairdresser. And my second question is, if a person has a skin problem, will it be permissible for them to use medicine with alcohol in it? And my third question is, if a girl, when she was 18 years old, and she went to a Darul Uloom, and then her father paid her fees, and then in her second year, her father had financial problems. So then he couldn't pay the fees, and then she left the madrasa. And now she's about 22 years old, and she's married. But the madrasa still sends them statements. So she wants to know now who's responsible for paying the fees. Does she have to pay it or her parents?
Okay. Jazakumullah, sister. Jazakumullah. Mufti Sahib will inshallah answer your questions. Let's take our next caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Ji, brother, your question.
I would like to ask the Mufti, I forgot to ask, I phoned earlier on, that what shares do the mother get when the husband is deceased?
Okay. You asked for the sons and the daughter.
That's right, ji.
Ji. Is there a mother also? The wife, is she also, is she still alive?
Yes, she's still alive.
Okay. Inshallah, Mufti Sahib will answer that question.
Jazakallah.
Okay. Jazakumullah. Let's take our, okay. Mufti Sahib, about the three questions that the lady asked. The first one is about a hairdresser. Can a woman become a hairdresser?
It is permissible for her to become a hairdresser. However, then she must study the laws pertaining to that. What she is allowed to do, what she is not allowed to do. And she must know the broad guidelines that what is permissible in Shariat. For example, she is not allowed to cut the hair of the females. And also, she is not allowed to cut the hair of the female, of the males even. Now is a tendency, unfortunately, that males are rushing off to female saloons where they are tended and their hair is being treated by females. It is absolutely haram, prohibited, and the wrath of Allah is upon that male who's allowing the female whom he can marry to trim, cut, and press his head. That is absolutely haram. So on one side, that if that female, it is allowed for her to become a hair stylish, etc., and work with the female hair, but she must understand the laws pertaining to the female hair. There is one book out concerning the female hair and the rules pertaining to that. It's on our website. alislam.co.za.
Jazakumullah. And the next question she asked was about if someone has a skin problem, can one give them medication that has alcohol in it?
Not to be utilized internally, obviously. External use, if it is synthetic, artificial, superficial, and medical alcohol, that will be permissible. Meaning that alcohol is not one that you drink and become drunk. That is medicinal alcohol, and that is synthetic, and in fact it is quite dangerous to consume that type of alcohol.
Jazakumullah. Then the third question is, a girl at the age of 18, she went to the Darul Uloom. Her father paid the fees for a few months or a few years. And thereafter, he went into some financial problems. He could not pay for a few months the fees. So, but now the girl is out of the madrasa. She's married. She's now 22 years old. The sister wants, but the madrasa is still sending them statements for the outstanding fees. She wants to know who is responsible for that fee.
Well, when that madrasa, I'm astonished that that madrasa is still sending that the accounts, because rather said that that madrasa is not in touch with the pupils, and especially female pupils. That madrasa, when that female was studying there and the father went into financial difficulties, it is most astonishing to know that that madrasa never realized that particular girl is not paying the fees, and no inquiry and investigation was made concerning the fees. And now, after so many years, they are still sending their account. So this concerned female should write a letter to the authorities of that madrasa explaining to them that during that period of my studies, we had financial constraints and difficulties. As a result, we were not able to pay your fees. However, that in that madrasa form, there is a section who is responsible for the fees. So the person who signed responsibility to pay the fees on that madrasa or Darul Uloom form, that is the person responsible to pay the fees. If she signed it, she is responsible. If her father signed it, her father is responsible.
Jazakumullah. Then the brother asked about the shares. Two sons, a daughter and a wife.
Also, I told you, go to our website and see that we are saying 1/8 goes there, and also 2-to-1 proportion to the male and female.
Jazakumullah. So the next question, Mufti Sahib, is about the brother wants to know, if a latecomer joins the Jamaat, does he make niyyah for that salah if he has previous qadha outstanding for that day?
Now that latecomer, obviously his ruh have to make niyyah for that salat. He cannot now join a asr salat and make niyyah for zohr salat that he has missed. No. And this brother who's asking the question, perhaps he's confusing it with the sahib et tartib, who is a person who has not missed salat from the time the person has become baligh. Now, perhaps the questioner is confused. And if he's not a sahib et tartib, then the latecomer will make niyat of that particular salat that he is joining.
Jazakumullah. And, okay, Jazakumullah for that one. So, the next question, during wudu, if wind comes out, do I restart my wudu?
Obviously. The whilst performing, and even if you are in the last stages of your wudu, and any eight factors which nullify the wuzu or break the wuzu take place, then obviously the wuzu has been invalidated, broken. You'll have to restart and remake your wuzu.
Jazakumullah. So, okay, we have a caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam.
Ji brother, your question.
Well, sir, I've got a question. The question is regarding the clothes that you buy for babies. You know, usually they come with pictures of animals, etc. on it. Now, I know we are not allowed to buy those clothes, but usually the women folk, they buy it and they say they will remove the eyes from it. Is this permissible, Mufti Sahib?
Absolutely permissible.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah, brother. Jazakallah. The next question, the person wants to know, I would like to know, in Salah, does the woman have to place her hand flat on the ground or slightly raised? And where can she get the source of this?
There is a book which has been published by Darul Uloom Azadwal, Salat of Women. And it is a fairly well-documented, researched book where the difference has been shown between the salat of men and women. Nowadays, there is one group that is trying to promote this idea that the salat of men and the salat of women, there is no difference. This is a completely false and erroneous concept. And that book, which has been released by the Darul Uloom Azadwal, is a very well-researched, documented book with all the references, relative references in place. So the woman should place her hands flat on the ground. And the basic idea that whilst the woman is performing the salat, she should be concealing and cramping her Salat performance style, contrary to the men, who will be more profound in performing the Salat.
Jazakumullah. Assalamu alaikum. Can one wear ihram in Jeddah?
At the airport, yes, permissible according to us.
Jazakumullah. The next question, is it true that if one has a pomegranate tree, then it is dangerous because of jinns?
Why the jinnat like pomegranates? This is an old story, 40, 50 years ago, that in South African history, when you look, then you will find when the masajids, especially in the KwaZulu-Natal area, generally when masajids were built, then in the yards of the masajids were pomegranate trees. So masajids are generally associated with jinnat and the yard also. So any strange activity event took place, the pomegranate tree was also associated and linked to those supernatural activities. There is nothing supernatural attached to pomegranate trees.
Jazakumullah. So a person wants to know that if there is any harm in the Sharia to buy Easter eggs and to eat it?
Buy it before Easter or after Easter.
But not during the Easter.
Do not buy it during the Easter period because it is specially linked with one ideology and civilization and philosophy. So abstain from it. If a person does it, buys it and eats it, obviously he has not done a haram action, but definitely engaged in a makruh action.
Jazakumullah. We have a caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Mulana, I just want to ask Mufti Saab, I just want to know the rewards and the significance of Umrah.
The rewards and significance of Umrah?
Yes.
Okay.
Jazakallah.
Jazakumullah. See, Mufti Saab, the rewards and significance of Umrah.
When a person is going for Umrah, is spending money in the path of Allah, and also by visiting the blessed place, a person will be rewarded by looking at the Kaaba, for making tawaf, for making the sa'i. Each one of these actions has got a reward separately. So a person, for example, the Kaaba, 120 mercies descend upon it, and 60 mercies for those who are making tawaf, 40 for those who are performing salat, 20 for those who are looking at it. So every stage, the person is rewarded. When a person is in Ihram, then the steps taken in Ihram, the sins are falling off, sawab is attained, the person's status is risen. However, that these days, unfortunately, people perform Umrah upon Umrah, but their lives do not change, the personalities are not altered, and this has become a fashion these days to perform Umrah. Unfortunately, yet to such an extent, it has become like a tour. And sadly enough, that the authorities are also calling it tour, etc. So we should first of all focus properly that this is not a tour, and it is a ibadat. And people these days, Ramzan after Ramzan, going and performing Umrah, but when you look at them carefully, that not an iota of change takes place in their external life, their spiritual life, or their business transactions still remain where they are. So people should take serious stock of them. It has become a fashion these days that to go for Ramzan Umrah and holiday time to go for Umrah. So sincere soul searching should take place, and we should realize that this is a great ibadah. To perform Umrah in Ramadan is like performing Hajj with Nabi Akram sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Rewards are tremendous and great. To visit grave of Nabi Akram sallallahu alayhi wa sallam makes one deserving of his intercession. And that is a great boon and favor on its own. However, that how many are going and taking the real benefit of those blessed places.
Jazakumullah. So when a baby is born, how should the 7 days be counted?
The next day,
meaning Mufsa?
Baby is born Tuesday, then from there you say Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Wednesday is the 7th day.
Okay, Jazakumullah. And the Salah mark on the forehead,
yes,
and the feet. Please explain what's the significance of that.
Those who got it, that Alhamdulillah, they should be happy they have received or they obtained some Salah mark. However, this does not mean that the person is now a righteous person to the core, or a religious authority, or a person going straight into Jannah, or this person here is accepted in the eyes of Allah, or this person is an extremely close servant of Allah. This is just a way of showing that Alhamdulillah, this person, inshallah, is trying to perform Salat regularly. So it depends also, according to some scholars, upon the skin of the person, on the carpet that he is going on. But we will not go in for that discussion, but we will say that externally, that this person, he looks like one who is very regular in Salah, and we should make dua that Allah Jalla Majdahu also makes us regular and constant in Salah. Every Muslim should strive to become regular and constant in Salah, and the person who has got this should not have a superiority complex over others and think that I have got this mark and now I'm going straight into Jannah, and all those who do not have this mark are inferior to me.
Jazakumullah. We have a caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Jesus, your question.
Gee, I'd like to find out, my father has passed away, right? And in his will, he's left some heirs. And subsequent to that, two or three of the heirs have passed away. Do they still receive an income from like the property that he's got? Or because they have passed on, they don't get anything? Because what has been happening is their children has been taking their income.
Did they pass away during his lifetime or after his
death? After he passed away.
After he passed away. Yes. Okay, Jazakallah, sister. Inshallah, Mufti Sahib will answer your question. Jee, Mufti Sahib, the father has left. She says that the father has left in his will some heirs, and from there now two or three of them have passed away. Do their children also receive from the inheritance?
See, the father, he's alive.
The father passed away.
See, the father, when he was alive, he left a natural will, an Islamic will.
It seems so.
Because then X, Y, and Z were getting.
Hmm.
Now what has happened that that X, Y, and Z have passed away, and the father was still alive.
I asked the sister. She said that they were alive. All the heirs were alive when the father passed away.
So what's the problem then?
So she wants to know that now that two or three of them have passed away, do their children still continue getting from the inheritance?
How are they going to get? Is this inheritance perpetuity?
Gee, it's from property.
From property. Here, an alim's advice should be taken that did they form a trust? Because if they formed a trust, and now there is the trust paying, and if the trust was paying the principal factor, then there will be a clause in that trust generally that in the absence of the principal factor, the subsidiaries, the children will get. So that clause has to be sought out in the trust deed. If it is stated that no, only the principal factor will get as long as the principal factor is alive, and upon the demise of the principal factor, the subsidiaries of the principal factor will not get, then obviously they do not get. But in most cases, the trust deed is designed in a manner that the subsidiaries or the children of the principal factor do receive after that.
Jazakumullah. We have a caller. Assalamu alaikum.
Hello, assalamu
alaikum. Walaikum
salam. Mana, I have a question for you. Was the previous caller called in and you were speaking about Umrah? Okay. My family, we are 6-4 girls and my parents. Okay. We are intending on going for Hajj, but as you know, Hajj prices is extremely expensive. Okay. Now, if we were to go to Umrah, for Umrah, okay, Hajj does become compulsory, am I correct?
Well, we'll have to ask the Mufti about that. If you go for Umrah, Mufti Sahib, if you go for Umrah, does Hajj become compulsory?
Is this our last question, inshallah?
Hopefully, inshallah. Is there any other question, sister?
No, I mean, yeah, it's just like, I said, I didn't hear the Mufti. He said Hajj does become compulsory.
Hajj doesn't, we'll have to clarify with Mufti. Why is there any other question that you would like
to? Only because we're planning that Hajj, I mean.
Okay, I'll answer that, don't worry.
Okay, inshallah, Mufti Sahib will advise you.
Okay,
Jazakallah. Ji, Mufti Sahib.
These days, because of unfortunately the Hajj has become so expensive due to so many factors, and the Hajj packages have escalated to such an extent that the average man, even when he saves up, year by year, the goalpost is being moved economically and he cannot afford that any longer. As a result, that he gets despondent. Now, if a person goes for Umrah and the packages are reasonable, and unfortunately, I hear these days that the Umrah packages are also becoming out of the reach of the average person. However, if a person goes for Umrah, it does not make Hajj obligatory upon that person. Because in our age, a person may be able to afford Umrah, but does not have the monetary, financial strength and power to go for Hajj. So the person can go for Umrah, and Hajj does not become obligatory or compulsory upon that person who has performed Umrah. However, the best course is to save money and go for Hajj first, and then Umrah. Because Allah Jalla Majidahu says, وَأَتِّمُ الْحَجَّ وَالْأُمْرَةِ, that complete your Hajj and Umrah, using the word Hajj first. So if you can afford it, try to follow that sequence, perform Hajj first and then Umrah. However, to reiterate, that I not be misunderstood, that if a person goes for Umrah, it does not necessitate or make compulsory or obligatory the performance of Hajj.
Jazakumullah. And we come to the end of our program. We do have many other questions. Inshallah, we will carry it on for next week. We will carry it forward, inshallah. Or you can call us again next week during the same time, inshallah, from 8:30 to 9:30. That's our Q&A program with Mufti Afzal Hussain Ilyas. Your closing comments, Mufti Sahib?
Tonight I would just like to make a statement about and appealing to those who are affluent and those who are running firms and factories and businesses, that in our humble opinion, if your turnover is 1 million per month or more, then you should employ at least one alim, and that alim you should pay well and keep him on site to see that your transactions, your buying, your selling, your interaction with your staff, and your spiritual upliftment and maintenance is Sharia compliant. So if this is done, that will serve as a incentive and also a good encouragement for businessmen to become Sharia compliant. And every person this day wants we want our business to be Sharia compliant. And the best method is to have the alim on board. You have a transaction dealing, you consult the alim. And after a time, then that alim treat him properly, give him his status and honor and dignity and office and with air condition and everything and good salary. And then let him do some research when he is not consulting or not consulted upon or with.
Jazakumullah, Mufti Sahib. And once again we say shukran and jazakumullah. May Allah reward you for your time every week. And may Allah accept, inshallah. Jazakumullah khair.